pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
You're listening to the Culture State Podcast.
Get ready. Woo!
All right, welcome to the best podcast you will listen to this week. I said it. It is the Culture State Podcast being brought to you right here by Capital Broadcasting and the Podcast Network. You can watch us on YouTube. You can watch us on WRL Sports Plus. And you can also listen to us through podcasting. I am Chris Lee. That is my man, Dennis Jamel Cox.
That's right. I'm over here. He's over there. By the way, what you said about this being the best podcast you're listening to this week, put it down. That's
put
right.
Put it down. Let's put it do down. It. And for the Carolina fans out there, North Carolina Tar Heel fans, we have one that's special for you today. We're talking to Brandon Robinson, of course, former player, who after his playing career decided that, hey, you know, I want to go into coaching. And so he was on the bench this past year with the North Carolina Tar Heels as they were making their run towards the national championship. He has a lot of insight on a lot of the things that were happening towards the last days of Roy Williams, a lot of insight as to what was going on with the North Carolina Tar Heels behind the scenes as they're making their national championship run. Is there beef between Carolina coaches and Duke coaches? You know, there's a lot of things that kind of happened and transpired, and so we had a chance to catch up with him on a lot of different topics.
I want there to be beef, by the way, between the two. I want it. I want to sit here, feet propped up, popcorn, just sitting here watching, like, ooh, what's going to happen next? That's what I want to have happen.
But I think most fans want that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm okay with, like, I get respecting your opponent is one thing, but it's okay to not like them. It's okay to be like, nah, I don't like you. I respect what you do. I'll be nice, whatever it is. Like when it comes to playing the game, sure. But nah, I'm going to beat you, man. I don't like you. I wish we had a little more of that. Just a little bit more of that. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with a little bit of controversy. To me, it's more entertaining.
You know what I hope comes out at some point? Not even something about whatever happened during the season or something during the regular season, right? Leading up to a Duke of Carolina game. I want to see maybe a video of like Sean May and let's say Emil Jefferson at the same hotel at Peach Jam, and they're getting their breakfast at the same hotel in the morning and they bump into each other and it's like, yo, what's up, dog?
You know, that type of thing.
Like in the middle of July.
Yes.
and that can build up all of everything until we get to February and March. And it'll just make it even better, right? Like, it'll be amazing to see if there's tension on the recruiting trail. I know there's not. Like, we know that most likely these guys are friends.
Don't hold the elevator door. No. You go where you got to go. You know, you can take the next one. I'm shutting
this door. Close this door. Let me close this door.
Then you're like, hey, you're walking through a door. Like, you're supposed to hold the door for somebody. Let it close, man. I'm for that.
You wanted the last French toast stick? No, I've got it.
This French toast stick, as you take a bite out of it, yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
Non-bruised banana for the continental breakfast? No, just, I've got that.
No, actually, what you do, if it's the last banana that's not bruised up, you bruise it up and you hand it to them.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's petty.
Exactly. You're a little petty.
You are a little petty. I'm starting to notice that you are a little petty.
Hey, Chris, what if you call me a heel, right? This is what I do.
You are a heel.
I poke and I jab. I love it. I'm okay with petty. Give it to me, man.
Yeah, I feel you on that. We'll see what happens with that. But, you know, that's our fantasy booking for Duke, North Carolina. But let's talk about what's actually reality. Brandon Robinson joined us right here on the Culture State Podcast, and he's talking about reality. Get out of our fantasy world right now. We'll head to reality right now with Brandon Robinson. All right, we had to get you some Tar Heel flavor right here on the Culture State Podcast, and former Tar Heel himself, and also spent some time on the bench as a coach for the North Carolina Tar Heels. Brandon Robinson joining us today. Brandon, thank you so much for your time. I think we have to start off, with just the historic, magical run that the Heels had, beginning with winning at Cameron Indoor Stadium and ending with the Heels almost getting a national championship. I mean, you had a chance to win a championship as a player, almost had it walked away with one as a coach. But just from your insight of being with the team,
What's going on? Like, what kind of water did you guys drink? Like, what was going on between that last game at Cameron Indoor Stadium until you guys played Kansas in that national championship game?
I think we just kind of started clicking at the right time. And I always took one thing that Coach Williams said, you know, like going through the tournament, when you get in those games, you need a little bit of luck. And, you know, some teams that we had struggles with matching up with early in the season, we got a chance to avoid playing them. So I think that helped us out a lot too. But definitely winning that game at Duke gave us a lot of confidence. Just, you know, there was a – I don't know what their rank – they were probably top five at the time we played them. But, you know, they had a lot of momentum. And then just the hype, the magnitude of that game, and being able to keep our emotions intact and controlled. And then also just, like, us being able to, you know – all the media stuff, the fanfare stuff that was going on that day, how that was so big, you know, being in the Final Four, that's kind of the same thing. So we're kind of already used to that going on.
Let me ask you this as a follow-up to that, though. But, like, you know, you guys, of course, had certain struggles. And, you know, if you looked at Tar Heel Twitter, man, a lot of people were off the off the Hubert Davis bandwagon. You know, in February, some in January, there were games that folks felt like you guys shouldn't have lost and things like that. And so when you're thinking about the NCAA tournament, some people were even wondering if you guys would even make it. Not only did you make it, you guys almost won the whole thing. What's it like being on a squad like that that had that type of a turnaround?
I think we always were a tournament team. I don't know why people didn't believe that we're a tournament team, but, you know, they have their metrics that they use, like the quad one wins, whatever. I don't even know how that stuff works, but I always felt like we were a tournament team. And we lost some games that we shouldn't have lost. And I even told people just kind of like my freshman year, we lost to Georgia Tech, our first ACC game, and ended up winning a national championship. But, you know, us not having a lot of ranked opponents that we played against that year also didn't work in our benefit as well, just because we never had those, like, signature wins that people were looking for or the committee was looking for. But I always felt like we were a tournament team. We just had to prove it to people. And, you know, we just had five guys that could really – that are really effective and experienced in that starting five group. So I think that helped us out a lot. And, you know, Dontrez and Puff were able to come in sometimes in those games and just give us some momentum, some big-time plays going in. I think, like, Dontrez had one of the biggest plays in the tournament that's not really talked about.
Yeah.
As a freshman coming in and being able to knock down a big-time shot like that, I believe it was
in that UCLA
overtime.
Game.
No, yeah. It's the Baylor game.
Baylor. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. When we were struggling, couldn't even get anything going. And for him to step up right there and knock a big-time shot in like that as a freshman, that's huge. So, you know, just having those guys pitch in, those two helped us out a lot.
All right, take us into that Baylor game. That moment, you guys are up, was it 25 or so in the second half? Before you know it, you're going into overtime. What was that swing of emotions like?
How much were you guys clenching your butt cheeks on the sideline? Like, you had to be, like, sitting super tight.
That's, like, the most hopeless I ever felt in, like, being involved in any basketball game in my life, just because I'm not playing, so I can't go out there on the court and have an effect on the game. I'm just sitting over there just like, trying to encourage guys, just watch, like, being a spectator. But it's crazy because, like, how you say, a swing of emotions, like, the game going on, Brady going crazy. And I'm thinking Brady, like, I was about to score 40 points the way he playing. I remember he making shots, like, and then too, we're also playing in Texas, so the Baylor fans, they were deep in there. They was talking trash to us, like, when we was running out on the court. And, you know, them just went being a national championship team last year, coming in this year, so, like, us having that opportunity to play in that type of crowd and that environment was amazing. But he's going crazy, and, like, we're on the bench just, like, talking crazy, like, we just hype the whole bench going crazy because, like, he's playing well, we up 20. The next thing you know, he gets ejected. And then I felt like everything that could go wrong in a basketball game went wrong. And, like, I'm sitting over there, like, panicking. Like, I'm shaking because I'm like, oh, my God. Like, we up 20 right now. We lose. And I already know how our fans are. Like, they go to the extreme with everything. So, like, if we lost this game, I'm already knowing, like, if I get on Twitter or, like, social media or something, people are just going to be killing us, you know. And then, too, like, I don't know, like, the real history of March Madness, but I know that could have probably been the biggest deficit, like, somebody coming back and then winning. And, like, that's going to be talked about for history if they win this game. So just playing all those emotions in my head, but finally getting that game over with, us winning, like, that was the best feeling ever to just get past that game. But it was crazy, though, just from being on such a high, and then all of a sudden you're just so nervous because the game is super tight.
Yeah, it was one of those interesting games to watch, you know, on television as well, because like Dennis and I did radio that morning, and it was on right after we were done with radio. It was the 12 yeah. o'clock start, I remember.
Yeah, because we played super early. Yeah, I remember that. We played super
yeah.
early.
Yeah. And it was just one of those, it felt like one of those games for us, like in the media, where you have certain games where it starts, you know, looking like a blowout. And so in your head, you're already writing, you know, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about. This is what it is. I already have my plays from the first half. I already have my Brady Manic plays from the second half that we're going to use because he's going off, you know, this is it. And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets ejected. And then everything changed, not only for you guys, but like for us too. Like, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Everything that I just had planned is not going to happen at all. And so that was an interesting game. I've never covered a game that had that big of a swing before. But I want to take you back to the beginning, though. You're a Georgia boy. You're from, Atlanta. And you had a chance to go to other schools. I mean, you had, coming out of high school, you had Georgia Tech, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, other teams kind of going after you. What was it about the North Carolina Tar Heels and the opportunity to come to Chapel Hill that, inspired you to want to, you know, come north and come to Chapel Hill?
Yeah, for me, just coming out of high school, I felt like when it's time for me to make my decision, it was really between like three schools. I grew up a Georgia Tech fan, but when it came down to like really sitting down with my family and making a decision, it was between Florida State, Louisville, and North Carolina. And for me, I always wanted to go somewhere that was a basketball school and had like a rich tradition of basketball. I wanted to go somewhere that had a family environment. And then also, like, I wanted to play for a coach that was going to be in the Hall of Fame. I wanted also somebody that coached me and like recruited me that played in the NBA. So they also checked that box because Coach Davis recruited me. We played the same position. So he played in the NBA for a long time. Then I also wanted to go somewhere like where they had connections beyond basketball. I didn't want to make just a four-year decision. I wanted to make a 40-year decision, a lifelong decision. And just being on campus and then just being around a team, like I said, North Carolina checked every box for me. Just it's like that was like the only visit that I went on where like I really hung out with the whole team. Like every single thing that I did on my whole recruiting weekend, like I was with the whole team. And like that was a big like shock to me because like I had took other visits before I went to North Carolina and that really wasn't a thing. So I'm like, okay, other schools are saying this is a family environment, but North Carolina really had that family environment because on the visit, like I said, the coaches were there, their wives and their kids were there. And I remember, like, my little brother and Coach Davis' son, they're the same age. So, like, they was hanging out with each other. And then just, like, my family just being around the coaches' wives and just, like, just that big family atmosphere that checked all the boxes. And I feel like North Carolina actually put me in a position to do what I want to do now. I told Coach Williams kind of, like, from day one, like, I want to be a coach when I get done playing basketball. And he was like, well, this is the perfect place for you. Mm.
So – in your time here at UNC as a player, mm-hmm. from the time you finished, from the time you actually arrived, what did you learn about not only just basketball in this state and how big it is, but just about the state as a whole? Like, what did you learn and appreciate about this area that you enjoyed?
It's kind of crazy just because, like, growing up and stuff, like, when I used to come home from school, like, or I used to either go outside and play basketball with everybody in my neighborhood, where I used to come home and I watched like Baller's Life videos. And every time I used to pull up a Baller's Life video, like it always used to be people from North Carolina playing, whether it was like Quincy Miller, Deuce Bello, John Wall, like all those like big schools in North Carolina playing. So I was always watching them. And then like even here, like basketball is big time in Georgia. And it's funny because like I started to realize the magnitude of how big basketball is in North Carolina, how serious people take it. When I got to North Carolina, when I used to go up there and be like, you know, Georgia, we got the best basketball, like y'all, nobody's seeing us. And then all the kids on the team from North Carolina, like they arguing with me, like talking to me crazy, like y'all ain't got no hoopers, we got this player, we got that player, we got this player, we got that player. And it was even funny, like I was in Las Vegas at the summer league like the last week, and I was standing there talking to Dayron and Kobe. And then Trey Murphy walked up and he was like, there's three North Carolina players right here in the NBA. Where are you from? And like, so they always wear that pride and they're always talking about hoop state. So then when you take the account in college basketball, are just us, Duke, Wake Forest, NC State, like all those schools right there. And then you got Central that has good basketball too. So it's like you got all these colleges that have pretty good teams and pretty good success over a long period of time right in this same area and not really too far away from each other. So me coming to North Carolina, that's when I started to really realize and like embrace the tradition of the basketball there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of players that that came from North Carolina that maybe didn't even play basketball, is college basketball in the state. Bam Adebayo, you know, Montrezl Harrell, those guys, you know, enjoying, you know, good time in the league. We lost Dennis, but I wanted to follow up on that with, outside of like the basketball tradition in the state, what did you learn about the state just from a cultural standpoint, maybe, you know, between the hip hop, the fashion, food, you know, that different type of thing? I mean, I don't know if there's certain foods that you fell in love with or a cookout tray or something like that you fell in love with. But what was the difference with that and that makes it such a special place for you?
I think it was pretty cool just like kind of comparing it to, from Georgia to North Carolina. I think we got like similarities, but especially me being in Chapel Hill, I liked it a lot because I feel like it was more slowed down, not a lot of distractions. And I feel like campus was like good enough size where you can go everywhere. People know you, but it's not too much. And it's like people still treat you like a normal person. They don't treat you like a celebrity. So like, even though like people, like you go to a restaurant and people looking at you and know who you are, they'll be respectful enough to wait till you finish eating to come up to you and like ask to take a picture. But I think it's funny because, like, when I talk about Waffle House, the people in North Carolina, they look at me crazy when I say, oh, I can go to North Carolina. I mean, not North Carolina. I can go to Waffle House on a regular basis. Like, I was arguing with one of my friends, and she was like, you're nasty for eating Waffle House. Like, you're weird for eating Waffle House just, like, on a regular basis. And I'm like, well, that's what we do in Georgia down south. Like really down south. Like, people eat Waffle House on a regular basis. And I think, like, for them, I'd compare Waffle House to, like, Cookout. Like, people just like Cookout. That's their late-night selection. If they're out somewhere, they go to Cookout. So I think those are, like, the similarities. I think the toughest part for me is, like, coming to North Carolina versus being, like, in Georgia and being close to, like, Douglasville, being close to Atlanta. Like, it's so many wing spots, and that's, like, one of my favorite foods to eat. And I felt like I never, until, like, this final, like, this past year, I never found, like, a wing spot that I could really go to and, like, really get that that Atlanta taste of, like, wings and, like, how people prepare them, lemon pepper, all flats, like, and stuff like that. Like, I remember going to a couple wing spots in North Carolina, and I'd be like, can I get my wings all flats? And people just look at me like I'm crazy. But I finally found a spot that, like, in North Carolina that take care of me when I like to eat wings. So I've started to embrace the culture a little bit more.
What's that spot?
I think it's called, it's like Tasty Stop or something in Durham. Okay. That's what it's called, yeah.
By the way, I'm with you. I'm all about the flats when it comes to wings.
And that's the only way you're supposed to, when you eat wings, you get hot lemon pepper, all flats, or you get lemon pepper, all flats. And you got to get them like wet and crispy, like extra sauce on them. Like, that was funny. I was eating at a restaurant the other day, and it brought me out some lemon pepper wings. And I was like, can y'all just, like, come bring me the sauce and, like, let me do it myself? And I put it in, like, the bowl, and I was shaking it around. Like, I got to make sure it's right, man.
Okay, well, that's very much an Atlanta Lou Williams special. I'll just go and leave it at that.
Dead
serious, though.
Everybody that, like, in the Atlanta culture, basketball, too, like, they'll tell you, like, lemon pepper, all flax, wet, extra crispy. That's like a real thing. It's serious now here about that. And you have multiple wing spots you can go to. Like, there's like four different wing spots that I go to, like, around, like, my house where I live at. And then in North Carolina, I only got one wing spot that I can really, like, consistently go to.
Okay. Well, try Sharky's in Raleigh. They actually have really good wings out there.
All right, I'm going to take your advice. Next time I got you.
Yeah, Sharky's
you're going to have them going to hostile territory there.
No. It's fine. You're not that close to State's campus. It's okay. They're not hostile. Trust me, Brandon Robinson has never been threatened by anything around Raleigh. Ever. So trust me, he's doing just fine.
Have you ever lost to NC State since you've been there?
I did one time. We slipped
just
up.
One time? Out of
we
like... Like out of like what eight too. Times?
Yeah, that one still haunt me though because we should never lost that game, and it was funny too because that game it was in Coach Keith's first year, And like when I tell you they beat us at home, that was like my sophomore year after us winning national championship. And a couple of their coaches were like talking crazy. It was like crazy. Like after like to the student section, to like our recruits and stuff, it was crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
We like that stuff up.
You have to appreciate the rivalries though. Now Chris asked you a question in regards like music and hip hop. Mm-hmm. Jermaine Dupri, is he an Atlanta hip hop guy or a North Carolina hip hop guy?
I'm gonna have to go Atlanta because Atlanta. I'm gonna be so real. I've never heard him associated with anything in North Carolina.
Well, he's from North Carolina. I didn't know if you knew that.
I thought he was from Atlanta. I never knew he was from North Carolina.
So yeah. It's one of those situations where I think he was born in like Asheville or something like that. But when he was young, you know, his dad was in the industry and everything like that. And his dad was in Atlanta. So I think most of his, it's kind of like Steph Curry in Akron, Ohio. Like he was born there. If you want to like, you know, say like, yeah, he's from here. Okay, cool. But like everything that's about him and who he is North Carolina. Same thing with JD. Like he's Atlanta. He's Atlanta.
So let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. If you're him, are you gonna say I'm from Asheville or I'm from Atlanta?
Atlanta.
There you go.
Atlanta.
There you go. You're from Atlanta. Come on now.
Yeah, Asheville's just a stop on the way to Atlanta if you're coming from somewhere else, right?
Exactly.
Say too, the one thing that I like about North Carolina that reminds me like similar to like Georgia and Atlanta culture too, is like everything like kind of like blends together between the fashion, the music, the sports, like all that stuff blends together. And I think that's like super cool. Like, especially like J. Cole, like just him, just like I've seen J. Cole so many times, like just whether that's like him at our games or him like coming to work out at our gym. So like that was always cool just to see somebody that I listen to like a lot, like just being around and being a normal person. And I think you see a lot of that too in Atlanta, where like high school kids, they have like Quavo pull up to their like high school basketball games because he's like big into watching high school basketball and like being around. He has his own AAU team. And I think like you have other rappers in Atlanta that like are associated with AAU teams that are always at high school games. So I think that's kind of cool too about North Carolina. How J. Cole is like one of the biggest artists in the world and he's always involved in the community and with basketball.
I thought about this too, Dennis, to go off of your question. B.O.B., he was born in North Carolina, of course, also moved to Atlanta, so he's representing Atlanta. There's a lot of those, and I think Young Jeezy was like born in South Carolina, goes down to Atlanta, so there's a lot of Carolina to Atlanta connection out of that.
We don't count.
He doesn't count South Carolina. Yeah.
Georgia and North Carolina share a border. Everything else in between doesn't count.
Okay, I respect that.
Britt, let me ask you this. You talked about that the NC State thing from your sophomore year. Let me ask you about this past year. There was this a little incident. Was it at your place or is it Cameron? I think it was at Cameron where Duke coaches didn't shake Hubert Davis's hand. Is that something that was overblown? Is there really like something going on between the two coaching staffs? Like what's happening with that?
I think it's overblown. I think it's blown way out of proportion. You know, like I said, the magnitude of that game and then what it was built up to be. And then, you know, for us, just like nobody believed that we could go over there and win that game just because of off of what happened when they came and played us on campus, like when we're at home and they embarrassed us. So we have all that emotion, and then they also have all this emotion of they're trying to honor their coach that's been there for such a long time in the right way. So it's two juggernaut programs going at each other, and we're both competitors, and we're both competing at a high level, and the game is so emotional. So I think just everybody's emotions were involved, and it's nothing personal. It happens in sport sometimes. Like, we all have played sports where sometimes our best friend, we get into it with him, almost go to blows. But 2 weeks, a week later, even a day or an hour later, we sitting there laughing, hugging, and it's mutual respect between each other. So I think it got blown out of proportion. I think for me, it's more something the fans talk about than the coaches. Like that's like what the fans want to live up to just go at each other fan base. But I think for like coaches, it's not that deep. You know, it happened. It is what it is.
All right, my final question for you as a former athlete. Turned coach. I'm same thing. I played lacrosse in college, coached collegiately for 9 years total.
take us into that mindset when you go into a rivalry game like that, like you're going into Cameron Indoor, being on the court as opposed to being on the bench as a coach. How does the mindset for you change going in, or do the emotions change, or is it like, nah, I hate those guys down there? Does that ever go away in any way, shape, or form?
That's a tough question, because, like, honestly, like, the times that I played at Duke, like, as a player, I felt like that game where we played them last year in Coach K's final game was so much different than any other Duke game that I ever played in. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I remember, like, sitting on the bus and, like, usually, like, I'm the type of person, like, all my teammates would laugh at me for this and not even do this to this day. Like, when we used to get in the, like, on the bus, like, we get on the bus, as soon as we pull out the tunnel and we get, like, out the parking lot and, like, get ready to make a right and go down Super Bowls to turn or whatever, I think it's now 5501 or whatever it is, like, by the time we get out the tunnel, like, I'm asleep. I go to sleep every time I get on the bus. I don't know why, I just do. So, like, this time we get over there and I'm not asleep. So usually every time that we go to Cameron, like when I wake up, we right there about to get off the bus. Like I stayed up the whole way there and I'm just like looking at traffic. And as soon as we get to Duke campus, you see so many people there. And I'm looking at like the people that standing outside. I'm like, I've played in Cameron multiple times. They don't fit this many people in here. Like that's how many people were out there. And then like we're walking to go to the gym. I've never seen that many people like stand there. They always block it off with some ropes and you walk through the crowd. I've never seen that many people there. And it's like, as soon as I got like in the locker room and I went upstairs, like with some of the players on the court and they getting ready to shoot around, like you just felt that energy in the building and how like big that game was to like yeah. Duke fans. Like that game was so big to them. And I felt like for them, they're in the mentality of like, are we about to blow them out? Just like we did when we played them in the Dean Dome. So, like, for me, that's why I say this game was so much different just because, like, normally when you play Duke and North Carolina rivalry, like, you never know what's going on. Like, even, like, in one of the worst seasons that we've had since I've been there when I played, like, we should have beat Duke at home. Like, we never went into the game where I felt like people were like, oh, they don't really have a chance. And it might be different because I was playing and I kind of toned all that stuff out when I play, and it's a little different now, like. It's hard for me. Like, I'm always motivated for the games, but, like, now, like, as a coach, like, on the coaching side, I like to read stuff to get me motivated and hyped for the game. And, like, I always say certain stuff to the players. I'm like, oh, you see when they said this, just to, like, give them a little edge. But I feel like that Duke game was just so much different just because of all the stuff that was going around it, just how they had so many former players come back, and then they made the little tunnel for Coach K to walk out through before the game. So, like, that was always crazy. But, like, for me to answer back, like to piggyback on your question, like when we go over to Cameron or when Duke comes to the Dean Dome, like we always try to like, you know, we gotta put on, like we gotta, not only for us, like as players, like we trying to win this game for bragging rights for ourselves, but we gotta do this for our fan base and the former players and everybody that has put that jersey on before us. So it's like a huge deal to just, you know, always just have that respect and those bragging rights.
As somebody from North Carolina, I definitely felt like that game was very different. A lot of it was because, you know, I never saw a Duke game that the actual game, Duke and Carolina game, where the actual game was secondary to what was going on, right? It was always, yeah, for sure, that was the main event. And I felt out there, I was out there and we were broadcasting, and I didn't think about this until I was there. And I saw what you were seeing, and I was like, this feels different. And then you see all those players, 96 players, all of the same shirts who helped hang up all of those banners back there. And that was where I felt like Duke was in trouble, because it was like, this is a team full of freshmen who are going to carry the bulk of the weight. And there's immense pressure because this is this man's last game here in this building that he's going to coach. And look at all those players behind you who have won bigger games than this. And they're looking at you to close this out, you know, the right way. And that's when I started feeling like, oh, I don't know if they can do this. And it had nothing to do with basketball on the court or anything like that. It just felt like crazy pressure. But I wanted to ask you this from the perspective of going from player to coach. I mean, you just finished up playing not too long ago. And, you know, you were a four-star coming out of high school. You know, you dealt with injuries in college, but, you know, it felt like, you know, one of those things where if you healed up, yeah, you could go on and you could have a nice career, you know, try to fight your way into the NBA, maybe even find, you know, get a lot of money overseas or whatever. What made helped you with the decision to say, you know what, I'm done with playing. Instead of trying to go professional and playing, let me try this coaching thing out. What made you go to that so fast?
I was definitely a difficult decision for me to stop playing. And, like, even now sometimes I miss playing. And, like, for me, I love just getting out there, like, when some of my old teammates come back and, like, they get done working out and I just, like, hop in with them and just, like, work out, get shots up, or just play one-on-one. So, like, I still had a love for the game and I still, like, miss playing it. But I think what made it so easy for me to stop playing is because, like, coaching has always been a passion of mine and something that I've always wanted to do. Like, I didn't wake up one morning and be like, oh, I want to coach. Like, I've been saying that I wanted to coach my whole life. Like, everything that anybody that knows me, it's like everything that I've said from the time I've been a kid is I want to play in the NBA. And then when I get done playing in the NBA, I want to coach. So, unfortunately, like, I didn't get to accomplish my dream of playing in the NBA. But I think everything kind of happened for a reason. It's kind of weird, just like me being hurt my whole senior year and not being able to produce at like the level that I wanted to, and like being able to put together like stats and film so I could send to professional teams like overseas, or just like even get a chance in the G League. And I felt like I was deserving of that, and I didn't get the opportunity. And I felt like if COVID didn't happen, I'd probably still be playing basketball to this day. But, you know, COVID happened and I was at home, like, just trying to figure out where I was going to play at, and, like, the contracts didn't really make sense. The situations that, like, people wanted me to be in didn't make any sense. So, like, I'm sitting at the house one day, and I called my old AAU team, and I'm like, yo, can I just come watch y'all, like, practice? And they were like, man, do you want to help us coach? And I was like, sure. Like, I was like, you know, this will be good for me to do because, you know, like, I have some valuable, like, insight of where they're trying to go and where they're trying to get to, just because these guys were juniors in high school. So, and next fall, they're going to be making decisions on where they wanted to go to school. So, you know, I started doing that, and I, like, really loved it. And then kind of Coach Davis got caught wind of it that I was helping coach AAU, and they asked me to come back. And when Coach Davis called me and asked me to come back, like, it kind of, like, I talked with my dad, and I told Coach Davis on the phone. I was like, you know, give me, like, a day or two to, like, really decide what I'm going to do. And I talked to my dad, and I promise you, like, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, I called him back, and I was like, I'm coming. Like, this is something that I really want to do. And, like, I'm really embracing it. You know, like, I study film all the time. I, like, read books on coaching, leadership. I listen to podcasts. I just try to just embrace, like, everything and all aspects of it to be a coach. So, like, I'm not doing this just to do it. Like, I'm really doing it because it's a passion of mine. It's something that I really want to be great in. And I just, like, also want to help others, how people have helped me. I think that's the biggest thing. Why I wanted to coach is because, you know, so many people helped me get to being a four-star recruit and being able to go to North Carolina, and I wouldn't have made it without those coaches and mentors in my life. So I want to give back to people.
It's awesome. And I know at some point we're going to be talking about Brandon Robinson, the head coach of whatever, you know, program or whatever NBA team. So definitely looking forward to that at a certain point. So thank you so much for your time today. And we really appreciate you. Miss seeing you on the court, but we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me.
All right, we want to thank my guy Brandon Robinson for joining us right here on the Culture State Podcast. Very insightful interview, as you know, far as what he has going on, what was going on with the North Carolina Tar Heels. But I just can't help but to think, if he decided, you know what, let me give this playing thing one more go, that we'd be seeing him doing numbers overseas, maybe even in the G League, and maybe even getting that two-way to show what he can do on the NBA level. So, I mean, he was really good. He was hampered with injuries his last couple years at Carolina. So I know things didn't turn out the way he wanted it to turn out, but he's a guy who was a really good shooter, really good athlete, and definitely could have offered a lot, but he's definitely going to offer a lot to kids in this coaching realm as well.
It was fun hearing him give the perspective of being the player on the court in big games, like Final Four games and such, as well as what it's like being on the bench. As someone who's a former athlete, now former college coach myself, is the dynamic of how you handle that situation completely changes. Even though the situation is, it may be the same or very similar, how you handle it and what you do, two totally different things, because as a player, you have a level of control. As a coach, yeah, you can direct and give instruction. Otherwise,
it's completely out of your hands. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's so different. Like how you handle that situation on the sideline is generally, I have found, is how your athletes are going to handle it. If you're calm, if you are like focused, if you've got, if you're somewhat stoic, I guess you could say, in those situations, then sometimes your players are going to be that too, because they're going to feed off that. If you get like all wild and crazy, sometimes your players will be like, what's going on? They themselves can get frantic. So it's interesting how on the bench, how you handle that situation compared to being on the court or on the field. But man, it is stressful when you're on the bench knowing like, I can't take that shot. Or like, I can't play defense right now. It's, it is a hard thing to handle. But it is also very rewarding when you see your players accomplish what they want to accomplish doing those things in those, in those high pressure situations. So yeah, it was kind of cool to hear his perspective on someone who's recently gone through it, especially being down there in the Final Four at Duke Carolina in New Orleans, which was just a wild, wild atmosphere. Good time down there, by the way. That game was just intense. It was insane. Oh, that's right. You weren't there. That's right.
No, I wasn't there. But no. I appreciate you for letting me know again how great of a time it was.
I know you wanted to be there, man.
Yeah, I should have. But, hey, that's not my decision. That wasn't your decision.
No, it wasn't.
Thank you guys for watching and listening to the Culture State Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Write in. If you're watching this on WRL Sports Plus and you've been enjoying this, write in and say, hey, we need more of this Culture State Podcast. It goes a long way. Trust us.
Oh, also, one thing real quick as well for all the beautiful people out there that are watching and listening to this. Culture State Saturdays is coming back, people. That's right.
Hey,
10 to noon.
On your radio.
Exactly. 10 to noon and on WRL Sports Plus streaming. Yes. 10 to noon, Saturday starting Labor Day weekend, September 3rd. Chris and I, throughout the fall, back on live, 10 a.m. to noon on Saturdays. You never know, we might show up at some football games, doing some live shows at some games. Like, hey, Greenville might be showing up to you when NC State's there, week one. Just saying, you, Chris and I might be out there.
More information coming. Make sure you follow us on our social medias all of that. At Chris Lee TV, at The Fan Rookie, at Culture State Pod. We'll see you next week.
The Culture State Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, with new shows coming out every Wednesday. Download and subscribe from wherever you get your podcasts, including the WREL Sports Fan app.